Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati. Right now we are joined by Tim Grunhardt on the phone. Timmy, where are you at?
I am in St. Louis, and good morning, everybody. I'm in St. Louis. I'm on my way to, first of all, I'm stopping here with Cassie. My youngest daughter is going to attend University of St. Louis this year, so we're going to go take a look at the campus as a family, and then we're heading up to Notre Dame. Colin has his football banquet tonight, and just going to quickly hit the banquet and then come back tomorrow because they have finals. So, just a quick little trip, kind of trying to kill two birds with one stone, looking at SLU and making my way up to the banquet. But glad to be out with you guys this morning. Exciting week in Kansas City, obviously.
How long does it take to get to Notre Dame from St. Louis?
About 4.5 hours. It's just about halfway. So it'll really work out well when, you know, Cassie's going to swim here at SLU, so... And if we want to, we can roll by and pick her up and go up to games, and she can watch her brother play. So it really worked out well. She was looking at TCU and San Diego and some other schools like that. They were a bit farther away, but SLU really beautiful. And, you know, I just want to give a shout-out and a thank you to Michael Carozzo, where Chickas Bagini began. He set me up last night. I went to the Hill and ate at Charlie Tito's. On the Hill, outstanding Italian food. And the gentleman who was my waiter said that Michael Grozo grew up two blocks from where we were eating and pointed over towards his house when we left. And I saw where Michael Grozo grew up. So for all those people out there, all our Grozo fans, and he's a great sponsor on 810, I saw where Michael Grozo grew up. How about that?
Have they recovered?
Now recovered.
Right.
They are still reeling from the Michael Grozo experience here in St. Louis. Great food. I don't know if you've ever been. Have you ever been here to St. Louis on the Hill?
I have. And actually, I'll tell you, the last time I was in St. Louis, Mike called me and told me that I had to stop at Joya's Deli to get the hot salami sandwich.
Yes, we all benefited from
and
that.
And let me tell you,
oh my God.
Brought back a couple for these guys.
Oh, my God.
I took one to my dad. My dad loved it. And so if you get a chance before we get out of town, just go, you know, we'll just get one to go and roll with it. And I'm going to tell you what, that'll keep you happy all the way to South Bend.
Oh, I you know, Michael and I, we attended a couple of Cardinal games here, and nothing better than a hot salami sandwich in the morning after a night out of watching the Cardinals and the Cubs play.
Stephen was
sure.
Walking around the office the whole day going, hey, you guys want to try my hot salami?
Right. You know what? I gave both of these guys my salami, and they loved it. So yeah. I can promise you that. Go ahead and mark that tape. I'll do that with him. Okay, Timmy, let's get to it. First, you know what? I was going to go right to Marcus Peters, but no, because we spent the first half of the 6 o'clock hour talking about John Dorsey last night being named as the new GM of the Cleveland Browns. And so that's an interesting story by itself. But there are a couple of tweets I wanted to run by you and just to get your reaction.
Okay.
So it's a 4-year deal for John Dorsey. Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns, says that the Browns have been talking to Doris for 5 to 6 weeks. So she tweets, he will have final say over the roster. And the Browns did satisfy the Rooney Rule, but the big part there, he will have final say over the roster. And so then I look at a tweet from Tom Pelissero, who works at NFL Network and NFL.com, and he says, one more note on Browns GM John Dorsey. He has control over the roster in his contract, sources tell Ian Rappaport and me. Andy Reid had it in KC. So you have two tweets about this story, making sure to point out that in his contract it says that John Dorsey gets full control over the roster because, according to a couple of sources here, Andy Reid had it in KC. And so that doesn't surprise me, because I've always felt like Andy Reid, he's the end-all, be-all when it comes to football at Arrowhead Stadium. But what about you? When you see that, when you hear that clearly Dorsey wanted to have this in his contract because Andy Reid had final say on the roster, does that make you think any differently about, I don't know, Tom Bahali being on the team now and how things have gone down with other contracts or players or decisions? I'm just curious what your reaction to that is.
Well, first of all, there's no way that Dorsey was going to take a job that he did not have that. I think once you experience, being in the front office and you don't have, as a GM, the final say on roster, and that's kind of news to me. I thought Dorsey had a little bit more power, and, all the people that I've talked to over at Arrowhead would always rave about his eye for talent and bringing guys in, and, he was able to find guys kind of, that were a little obscure that were the kind of the second-level guys that he thought that could help out this program. And I thought he did a pretty good job of that. And I guess just from those tweets that, Andy Reid was the one who was saying yay or nay to that. And that's kind of news to me. I think we all felt that Andy Reid kind of had the final say on everything that goes on over there at One Arrowhead Stadium. But I think this reaffirms what we all thought. But as far as Dorsey, listen, he's got a great eye for talent. I think he's a football guy. I'm not sure how polished he is. I'm not sure how, he's not the kind of guy that can put a suit on and go shake hands with somebody in a banquet or, go work, with the city council or do those kind of things that Carl Peterson was so good at doing, is kind of being able to live in both of those worlds. John Dorsey is a football guy. And I think that was one of the things that maybe was his demise in Kansas City as it all came through fruition. He'd wear his sweatshirt, to the Hunt, box suite up at Arrowhead Stadium, and instead of wearing a tie and a suit and all those kind of things, and that was just kind of him. So I think him getting this job at Cleveland, I think it's a positive for Cleveland. Unless anything is a positive for Cleveland right now. That is an organization reeling right now with just, all kinds of issues. But if he can, get – I'm sure that he talked to the ownership. I'm sure that he talked to the powers that be over there. So listen, I have to have final say, and I have to have a little bit of money in this cap to go ahead and bring in people. I think he'd be good at that. So I think it's very interesting, those tweets. I didn't see those tweets. I think we all felt, I think you guys felt this as well as I did, that Andy Reid was kind of the last say there. But, I think John Dorsey, it would be interesting to see how he can build this program, because there's one thing about John Dorsey, everybody out in Kansas City, he can find talent. He can find talent. Now, everything else he's not that good at. Everything else he's not that pompous at. But the one thing the guy can do is he can find guys. He can find those Jimmys and Joes to fit into the X's and O's.
Yeah, I think there's some room for nuance here, because I think we all, like you said, we all knew that Andy Reid had more power in the organization than John Dorsey.
Right.
He was hired first, but final say is one thing. Like having 100% say versus final say, it doesn't mean that Dorsey had no say here. Mm-hmm. You know this, Grunty. It's not like every organization, people just agree 100% on every decision made, right? So,
absolutely.
I think most of the time, Dorsey probably told Andy Reid, I need you to go find us an offensive lineman, or I need you to go find us a guy that can do this or that, and then he would let Dorsey go do it. But if it came down to a situation where they disagreed on somebody, then Andy Reid had the call. Andy Reid was the tiebreaker. And so I think that that's probably, like you said, that's what Dorsey is looking for here, is he wants to have the tie-breaking vote next time he goes somewhere, and that's what he has in Cleveland.
I'll even go farther than that. I think that you're hitting on something here, Nate. I think that John had the responsibility and had the ability to go out and find some free agents and find guys and fill that roster. But when it came to decisions on who was going to stay on that football team, from being a veteran guy, a Tamba Ali, or whoever, that was all Andy Reid. I think that John, if he said, listen, I don't want Tom Bolley on this team, well, I do, it's too bad, he's staying. I think you hit on something that is on the fringes that, listen, I think if John said, hey, listen, I want to bring in, a corner, a backup corner, a Nelson or something like that. I want to bring this guy in. And he'd say, okay, yeah, you go ahead and bring him in. You know, we'll work with him. But I think when it came down to big time decisions on who's going to stay and who was going to go or who the big signings were and those kind of things, I think that Andy was in charge of that. And that's tough as a GM. Listen, you're hired as the general manager. And listen, we all know, we all live in the real world. You know, head coaches in the NFL right now have just about more power than any other position in that other than maybe owner. So general managers don't really have the power that maybe they used to have. But I think that that's what Dorsey wants. He wants it. You know, he's going into a program right now. He's going into an organization that's been struggling for years, for a lot of years. And he's got that eye for talent. I think he feels that, hey, listen, if we're going to keep Kizer here at quarterback, then now he's going to make that decision. So it'll be really interesting to see how it works out. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but I think Andy has the decisions on the big guys like, hey, we're going to re-sign Tom or that. Or if he just brought in guys, I think Andy just kind of let him do his thing.
And you mentioned John Dorsey in your confidence in him finding players and evaluating talent. You look and you could. Well, I know a lot of people can wonder. Well, why if you're Dorsey, why do you want to go to the Cleveland Browns? If you're anyone, why do you want to go to the Cleveland Browns? Well, they're set up. If he can have a couple of successful drafts the way he did here in Kansas City, I mean, they've got I think 5 picks in the first 2 rounds coming up in this 2018 draft. They've got 12 picks overall in the first 6 rounds and then over $100 million in salary cap space. And, I mean, look, if you're a GM and you believe – and so he has 5 picks in the first 2 rounds, 12 in the first 6 rounds, and over $100 million in cap space. If you're just talking about being a talent evaluator, not dealing with contract extensions and all stuff like that, talent evaluator, especially through the draft, well, I mean, if you're Cleveland, that's – this is a home run because he most likely will knock it out of the park considering how many draft picks they have in this upcoming draft.
And really, if you look at, I don't want to say small markets, but, you know, Cleveland and Green Bay, too, are very similar. And listen, Green Bay is a storied organization. I'm not ever going to say that Green Bay, is on the same par as Cleveland. But when you just talk about, you know, just size of towns and kind of the feel of an organization – you know, Green Bay Packers, let's face it, guys. And Green Bay Packers, when I was playing in the early 90s, and, you know, when I first got there, I know in the late 80s, that was not a very good organization. I mean, they were struggling, but they had Magic Man at quarterback, and, you know, they were struggling a little bit. And I know that Doris wasn't there for the beginning of that kind of turnaround for Green Bay, but he was there with the guys that did it. And one of the reasons why he was hired here in Kansas City is because, you know, the Green Bay did it the right way. They kind of built it through the draft. If you looked at the Green Bay Packers roster throughout the 2000s, it was all their draft picks. And it was all their guys that they built up, kind of like the Kansas City Royals, where all the guys that they brought up were the guys that were their superstars. So, you know, if he can do that, like you said, with those draft picks and bring in guys and evaluate talent. And listen, it can't get any worse in Cleveland. I mean, it can only get better, right? So, you know, let's say they make the playoffs, or they're even 500. He'll be a superstar. So it really is a good spot for him. And I think he has the blueprint. I think he understands how to kind of build up through the draft from his days in Green Bay.
Do you think he would want to trade for Alex Smith? I'm not kidding. I'm serious. Like
I'm not either. That's a great question.
Okay, I'll take it a step further. Who do you think he would? Who do you think he would be more interested in trading for, Alex Smith or Marcus Peters?
Listen, I think Marcus Peters is an outstanding football player that right now is just he's lost. Maybe a change of venue. Maybe a change of leadership. I was talking to some guys, and I know that, you know, it's not where we want to go at this point, but I was talking to some guys at the ambassador meeting on Wednesday night. Some of the guys that were, you know, storied defensive backs here for the Kansas City Chiefs, and just talking about him. And, you know, like everyone to a T said that the reason why Marcus is struggling so much is because Eric Berry isn't back there just calming him down and telling me, hey, go to the next play after you get beat on a play. He's just, right now, he's mentally, kind of struggling, for lack of a better word. You know, every time he gives up a play, he's frustrated and he gets out of sorts. And you know as well as I do, in the NFL, especially at the quarterback position, you've got to go to the next play. Marty used to say it all the time, go to the next play, go to the next play, go to the next play. Well, he's not. And you know what? And it's filtering and it's festering with all the defensive backs, because now everybody gets frustrated. Everybody's kind of acting the ass a little bit back there after they get beat. And you know what? You can't play that way. You cannot play that way in the NFL. And Eric Berry, according to all these guys, and I trust these guys, the guys that I've talked to, I'm not going to tell you who they are, because
who are they?
That would be their confidence. I'm not going to, but I'll tell you this. They're guys that know. They're guys who were leaders on this on teams that I played on in the late 80s. The guys who would listen. They were the guys that stood up and said, hey, listen, you know, they were talking about Dale Carter. One of them was talking about Dale Carter. He said, listen, Dale, if you stop all this antics and you listen to me and you lock in and you watch film with me and you calm down with me, you're going to be a Pro Bowler. And he goes, if I go to the this is Dale Carter to this guy. If I go to the Pro Bowl, I'm going to give you a ticket. Well, guess what? He went to the Pro Bowl that year because this guy locked him in. This guy said, hey, listen, we're going to do things right. And that's what he needs. Maybe get in here in Kansas City when Eric Berry comes back. Maybe they can find a guy that bring in a veteran defensive back that can help him out, because I think he's got a lot of talent, but I think right now he's just mentally lost, and that's not any way to play. Hopefully, this suspension, you know, when you lose PT and you lose money, you know, sometimes it refocuses a little bit, and I hope it does. Everybody thinks, you know, that the guys that are giving Marcus some flack here are against him. We're not against him. All right, he's a Kansas City Chief. He's part of our family. He's that little brother that's lost. He's a little brother that's kind of, you know, doing the wrong things. All right, you know, he represents us as Kansas City Chiefs. When you talk to Tim Brunhart, and the next thing you say is he's a Kansas City Chief. So he represents me as, even though I'm not in that organization anymore, that's who I am. So that's what bothers a lot of us. It represents us poorly. So he's part of our family. We love him. We want him to do well. But the reality of the situation is that right now he's lost and he's a mess. And he's got to refocus, and hopefully he can. But if he can't, move him somewhere else where maybe he can, because he's too talented not to be playing football.
Timmy, I couldn't hear. Did you say he's like a producer who's lost and out there doing the wrong things that we have to try to help?
No, he's to straighten himself out. I know guys have good leadership to get that straightened out.
Right. Okay. So Nate asked about Alex Smith, and we had a good discussion about that earlier. If you're John Dorsey,
yes,
and you're taking over Cleveland, and you think the Chiefs are going to be trading Alex Smith in the offseason, would you be interested in Alex Smith? And if so, and I think this is an interesting question to ask, what do you think Alex Smith is worth on the trade market right now, or at least in the offseason, let's say if Jacksonville is looking for him, or maybe John Dorsey with the Browns?
Okay, well, here's the first thing, guys. If I was John Dorsey, first thing I'd go in there, I'd talk to the coaching staff. I would talk to a quarterback coach, and I talked to Kaiser, and just kind of get a feel for it. Get a feel for how they respect him, how he works. You know, is he a guy that just hasn't been coached up, because he has a lot of talent? Is he a guy that doesn't put the time in the film room and in the classroom and the weight room? Is he out hanging around at the Hard Rock Hall of Fame and partying all night, and doing those kind of things? I mean, what is he doing? Is he a guy that we can count on? If he's not a guy that you can count on quite yet, then you go out and you find a veteran quarterback, because you got to have a veteran guy. You have to have a quarterback in the NFL to win. So, yeah, you go out and you say, okay, listen, if Alex Smith is a guy that's going to be available, Alex Smith can come in and Kaiser can learn under him for a couple of years. Because Alex, you know, listen, Alex, if wherever he goes, it's only going to be about 3-4 years, you know, anyways. That's about it. That's about how long he's got. And that's fine. That's a great career. So he goes through, plays three or four years with Cleveland and kind of brings Kaiser along. And then Kaiser, who's a great talent, you know, learns under Alex Smith, be a great, great thing. Now, I don't think there's a lot of value per se to Alex. I think maybe you can get a third round draft choice for him right now, because I think that, you know, people are going to say, listen, I'm going to cut him anyways if in Kansas City if things don't turn around, and because he's making a lot of money. So I think you probably can go out and get a third round or fourth round draft choice for him. I don't think you're going to get a first or second. I just don't see that. But you might be able to get a third round draft choice for him, in my opinion.
Okay, Grunny. We talked a little bit about Marcus Peters in a couple of minutes ago, but I want to go a little bit deeper with this topic because this has been the biggest story of the week. And so, if you're Andy Reid and you're looking at how important this game is, and you're weighing your options, it's regardless of whether you think it should have happened or not, you have to appreciate that it was a difficult decision for Andy Reid. Do you think it was Andy Reid's decision alone, or do you think ownership maybe had a say in this?
I do think the Clark Hunt called Andy Reid. That's what you're asking me. I do think the Clark Hunt. Listen, I was in that locker room after the meltdown. The Hunt family. This is their crown jewel. This is who they are.
All the Monday night meltdown is what you're talking about.
Yeah, the Monday night meltdown. I was in that locker room when Lamar came in, and you know it's like that grandpa or even your dad when he comes in and he says, hey, listen, I'm disappointed in you guys. I mean, for him, you know how that is. I mean, you beat me all you want as a parent. I know nobody does it anymore, but beat me all you want, but don't tell me you're disappointed in me. Don't tell me that I've let you down. And that's what Lamar did. He came in and said, you guys let me down. You guys embarrassed me. And that was tough. But that's the way they are. I mean, this is their deal, man. This is who they are. The Kansas City Chiefs and the Hunts, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship. So when you do that and you embarrass the Kansas City Chiefs, you embarrass them. Now, I don't think that Clark called Andy and said, you need to suspend him. I don't think Clark would do that. I think Clark would say, listen, that's unacceptable behavior. You know that. I mean, I'm really embarrassed. And I bet that he said, okay, well, you know, I gotta suspend this guy. Now, guys, I can only go back to my experiences with these kind of suspensions, okay, because I don't know what's going on in their locker room. I don't know what's going on in their front office. But here's an example. When I was a junior in college, we were playing for the national championship, and we were in the last game of the year in 1988. They're playing against USC, and two of our running backs missed a meeting. It was after Thanksgiving, so we went out there on a Thursday, and they missed like the Friday morning meeting. They missed it, completely missed it. And Lou Holtz called the captains and the veteran guys in and said, hey, what are we going to do with these guys? These are our two best running backs, right? Ricky Waters and Tony Brooks. Right? They missed the meeting. We're going to win the national championship, USC, who is, by the way, number one in the country. We're number three or two, something like that. And he said, listen, we got it. What are you guys going to do? I have to suspend these guys. And we said, yes, you do. We suspended our two best running backs, all right, and went out and won that football game. And I often look at why did we win that football game? I think we all sucked it up a little bit. I think we all said, you know what, hey, so we all got to bring our game up to another level. Well, you know, we got to block a little bit harder. We got to finish blocks a little better. The running back was Green. I can't remember his first name, but he had to run a little bit harder. You know, everybody had to pick up their game a little bit. And I think you may see that this week by the Kansas City Chiefs. This could be a wake up call for everybody. I think you're gonna see this defense play harder. I think you're gonna see this defense play more focused. I think you're going to see the defensive backs by committee. You're going to see the Gaines and the Nelsons and the Eckers and all those guys are all going to play. Now, listen, they're going to struggle because they're not that good. But I do think that they're going to be focused in it, and I think that this team is going to play a little bit sharper in this game because they feel like, hey, that we got to pick this up. And that might be the positive for the Chiefs. And you know what? It might be a positive for Marcus when he sees that and says, listen, I let these guys down. I was selfish in some of the decisions I made, and you know I let him down, and I got to refocus here a little bit. So this it may seem like a disaster, it may seem like a horrible thing, but it might turn out to be the key to turn the season around. If it takes guy, listen, this team has had a lack of discipline for the last 12 games. And I'm not just talking about Marcus; I'm talking about other guys. But I'm also talking about penalties. I'm talking about misassignments. I'm talking about just little things that haven't been sharp. You know, Kelsey's had some issues. Peters has had some issues. You know, we also had guys that, you know, have been late for things. you got to have discipline in the NFL in order to win. This could refocus these guys.
We have Tim Grunhard on the phone. Tim, we'll do another segment. I'm going to put you on hold. And Jake has a couple of questions for you for his podcast. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchetti. We rejoin Tim Grunhard on the road. Timmy, the Chiefs placed Dee Ford on injured reserve yesterday. And to replace him, they signed defensive tackle Justin Hamilton off of the Philadelphia Eagles practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
Dee Ford, boy, that escalated from day to day with a sore back to out for the year. Now, I'm going to read through this, and then you tell me what you think is going to happen. In reading from Therese Paylor's article, the Chiefs exercised Ford's fifth-year option for 2018 earlier this year. It'll be worth approximately $8.7 million. The fifth year has an injury guarantee, but would only kick in if it is determined that Ford is unable to play in 2018 after getting hurt this year. And salary cap expert Joel Corey says it's too early to tell whether the guarantee is kicked in. And basically it's going to come down to whether Ford can pass a physical by the first day of the new league year, which begins on March 14th. If he does, that potentially means the Chiefs could move on from him and save that money, provided he is released before that date. Do you think Dee Ford has played his last game as a Chief?
I don't know. I really can't answer that. I'm not exactly sure what this back injury is, but you guys are right. I mean, from day to day to IR is a big leap. I mean, anybody who's ever had a bad back, you can't do anything. I mean, that core area, you're just miserable and you can't really do anything. And whether this is something that's serious enough that would, need surgery, and if it does, then, that surgery in the back is a tough surgery to come back from. The momentum, just the kind of the feel for him coming back to Kansas City is just not there. I don't feel it. I don't know. I don't think that he may be a guy that's out a year and he gets picked up somewhere else and plays a couple more. And that's a shame because, Stephen, you and I have had a lot of opportunities to visit with him on our Thursday night shows back in the day. And the wonderful kid with just a great personality and could have been a really, really nice asset to the Kansas City Chiefs, not only on the field but in the community. And it just hadn't worked out for him. And it's a shame. And this has been kind of a running battle for him to stay healthy on the field. And, there's guys that never get hurt, and there's guys that always get hurt. And the key is to try to find the guys and they never get hurt. And guys that are out there and are consistently out there and don't have these physical issues. And then I hate to compare it to, and this is horrible, but I hate to compare it to, you buy a used car and you can get a car that never breaks down and you're doing great. And 10 years later, you're ready to trade it in and everything's great. Or you get that car that, it's just always in the shop. And it just seems like Kansas City Chiefs over the last couple of years has found those guys that are always in the shop. You got Dee Ford always in the shop. Tom Bailey always in the shop. So, do you re-sign that? Do you put more down payments on those cars? I don't know. I don't think so. I just thought, you just got to cut bait, I believe.
So this is a related topic, Grunny. Steven and I have talked a lot this week about the fact that Justin Houston did not register even a tackle, let alone a sack, in the game last weekend. And I had a guy on Twitter tell me that Justin Houston has 6 sacks this year in games that Dee Ford played in, but only 2.5 sacks in games he didn't. His argument is that without a bona fide pass rusher on the other side, Justin Houston's getting a bunch of double teams, and that's why he's not getting to the quarterback. I'm not watching it, closely enough on the All-22 to see. I feel like they dropped Houston into coverage a ton this year. But why is it? Do you think there's merit to that? Why aren't we, or does Justin Houston just not have the lateral quickness that he used to after the knee injury? Why aren't we seeing him make an impact in the pass rush when they desperately need someone to do so right now?
Well, I think there is a little bit to that tweak. I do think that, you know, when you're sitting down in the meeting room as an offensive staff and the offensive line coaches, and they're sitting in there and they say, okay, who do we need to take away? You know, that's the first thing you talk about in pass protection. Okay, who do we need to take away? Who are we going to set our protection to? And I guess it'd be Justin Houston. I mean, is there anybody else? Zombo? You know, Logan? No. I mean, so I guess it would be to Houston. I don't see that as much as I used to see it, where people were turning protection to him. But I would think that reputation alone has, you know, hampered him to, you know, or put him in the position where he's getting double teamed a bunch. But to be really honest with you, I don't see running backs going over chipping Justin Houston anymore. I don't see tight ends lining up over there and blocking him and going out or staying in and double teaming with the tackle of Justin Houston anymore. So, you know, maybe he has, you know, got a little hitch in his giddy up because of the injuries he's had. I still think he's really good at the point of attack and run because he doesn't really have to go anywhere. I mean, I think he plays with really nice leverage. I think he plays with good strength at the point. The thing that I don't see from him is the burst on the second move. Any great defensive lineman has a great second move or can go to something, can transfer into another speed, another gear, another move to get to the quarterback. I don't see that this year from Justin. I don't see it. I think if he wins on that first move, he's got that enough burst to get there. But if he stopped on that first move, to get off of that and get to a second move and then burst off that second move, I don't see it. So I think that there is a little bit of issue right now with maybe that injury or whether it's still hurt or whether he just, listen, I mean, it's a tough game. And on a side note, guys, I don't know if you guys watched that game last night. I'm telling you right now, the Saints had a bunch of injuries, and the Atlanta had some injuries, and Sean Payton after the game was just flabbergasted about these Thursday night football games. And I know for a fact that the Players Association is just steaming over this game. And we've talked about this before, Nate, you and I, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that they're making some money off of these Thursday night games, and part of it's because of the advertising on Thursday night. But I'm just telling you guys something right now. I'd be very, very surprised if they play Thursday night games again next year. I mean, too many guys, and at this time of the year, when guys are really beat up and guys are really, really tired, and you're going into that game 13, 14, 15, and 16, and you only have 3 days to get ready for a game, guys are going down like flies. And there's going to be some issues. That is going to be the main topic. I'm just telling you right now, that will be the main topic of the offseason of Thursday night football games, because coaches and players are getting pissed. And I'm not sure that the owners are, you know, getting mad, upset about it. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens on that deal. But getting back to Justin Houston, I don't see that burst on that second move anymore. And hopefully you can get it back, but I just don't see it this year.
All right, Grunny, let's talk about this game. The defense was awful against the Jets. Now there's no Marcus Peters. Darrell Revis hopefully will get some more snaps and be better than he was last week. Any adjustments that you think Bob Sutton should or will make without Marcus Peters? What does the defense have to do to turn things around? And they didn't play very well the first time around against the Raiders. So what about the defense on Sunday against the Raiders?
Well, Bob Sutton's in a tough position because after the bye week, I know you guys have seen this, he's starting to bring a lot more pressure. I mean, Simonson and you saw, I think Murray came a couple of times last week. I didn't think they brought a corner last week. They're bringing pressure, and they're trying to get to the quarterback and trying to get him off his spot and have him throw the ball earlier than he wants to. Unfortunately, the Chiefs just haven't got there. And when you don't get there and you blitz, you put yourself in peril. So I think that he's going to have to make a decision whether he wants to stay with that with that status quo of bringing people and bringing pressure, you know, especially on third down, guys. And listen, third down, they're failing. Third down is bad. The Kansas City Chiefs are really bad in third down, especially in the second half of the game. And you know, I'm not sure why that is, but if you look at just a breakdown, you know, they're okay in the first half. In the second half, they're brutal. So what do? You bring pressure. You bring five. You bring six. Put those cornerbacks in a tough position, but yet you're not giving the quarterback or the receivers time to get into their routes and into their patterns and into their timing. Or do you say, listen, we're only going to bring three or four. We're going to help these guys out. You know, we're going to bracket guys. You better bracket Crabtree this week. And what's his name? Cooper may be back. He was in the concussion protocol, and I think he came out of it, so he may play. And he really hurt the Chiefs last time they played. So if you have both of those guys out there, and you got some corners that have struggled, Gaines out there and Akers out there and Nelson out there who struggled at times, I don't know what you do. He's losing sleep over this decision. So according to all indications, that he's going to do what he's been doing. So I would expect pressure. I would expect them to continue to try to get to the quarterback and get to Carr, and hopefully those guys can hold on, you know, no pun intended, for dear life, because that's what they've been doing. You know, you can complain and moan and throw the flag into the stands as much as you want, but you can't tackle a guy in the line of scrimmage. You know, you just can't. You can't do it. They're going to call it. Even though, I mean, did it have a lot to do with that play? No, because the quarterback was pressured. He's running around for dear life. But you tackle the guy. They're always going to call it. You tackle a wide receiver. They're going to call it. They're going to call that hold. So I don't know what they're going to do, Steven. I really, you know what, it almost goes back to last week when people asked me a prediction of the game. I said, I don't know. I think the Chiefs are going to win this game. I think the defense is going to play better. I'm hoping that my theory of that everybody's going to pick up their game a notch, and you know they don't have Marcus Peters to kind of rely on or lean on. Somebody's got to pick their game up. These guys are professionals. They're good football players. I mean, they're professional football players now. I mean, there's not a lot of them. All right, so they've been picked out of thousands and thousands of guys who wanted to play football. They've been picked, so they have some talent. Now, if they can focus and they can bring that level of intensity up another notch or two, because they don't have Marcus Peters to rely on, you know, this could be a positive for the Chiefs. But I just don't know. I don't know. I wish I could answer. I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you. But you know, I think that it'll be shown early. I think by the first quarter, second quarter, we're going to know what's going to happen in this game. If they go out there and they get about three and out to start, I think you're going to see something special from this defense. But if they go down and they score a couple of touchdowns in the first quarter, it could get ugly.
Grunny, thank you very much for the time. Have a safe trip to South Bend. Enjoy the family, and we will talk to you next week.
All right, guys. We'll be in next week. We'll talk to you guys later.
That is Tim Grunhard, former Kansas City Chiefs center, that joins us every Friday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.